and welcome to today's lesson. Today we're going to focus on two different but somewhat related concepts. The importance of being an RCHB and how beneficial it is to you to be a master of your market. If you've missed the definition of RCHB, it stands for Reasonably Competent Human Being. We'll talk about exactly what that means here in a few minutes. Incorporating and even embracing both of these concepts into your real estate practice are critical to the success of your business, especially if you intend to generate business using the methods I'm teaching as a savvy prospector. And if you're a new or newer agent, they're even more important because you don't yet have a database of satisfied past clients to rely on. By definition, as a rookie, all of your business is going to come from people who haven't yet tried you out and must make the decision to hire you based on the impression they have of you. Besides, if you're an RCHB and you're a master of your market, your real estate career will be a heck of a lot more fun. And as I always say, the more fun you have selling real estate, the more real estate you will sell. Being an RCHB, which remember stands for Reasonably Competent Human Being, is pretty easy to demonstrate to people you know and the people you meet, whether you're meeting them as a real estate agent or just as a friend or new acquaintance. It's also pretty easy to come across as a non-RCHB, otherwise known as a flake. Coming across as a flake to the people you know and the people you meet will be deadly to your prospecting efforts, even if those people love you, even if it's your spouse or twin sister or best friend. So if you're going to rely on your current sphere of influence and your future sphere of influence for business, you may have to watch yourself a little closer to ensure that you're presenting yourself as a competent, positive, reliable, trustworthy, ethical kind of guy or gal. Please don't take this as an implied criticism of your trustworthiness or reliability. Even I have to keep an eye on myself when I'm socializing to ensure that I'm not venting too much or telling stories that might make me appear flaky or careless, or sometimes even not quite above board. In fact, I currently have a situation in my life where I'll need to make a very difficult decision, one that may not meet with the approval of my social network, and I really need to watch myself as to who I share the details of that decision with. Anyway, the good news for new real estate agents is that if you come across as an RCHB to your friends and acquaintances, most of them won't be too concerned about your lack of experience selling real estate. The general public doesn't think our job is very hard, so if you appear to be reliable, intelligent, and ethical, in many cases that will be enough to make someone consider hiring you. So let's get practical here. What can you do to demonstrate to the people you know and the people you meet that you're an RCHB? I've come up with 6 characteristics of reasonably competent human beings, all of which are 100% within your control. Here they are. Number 1, be on time. Number 2, return phone calls promptly. Number 3, strive for 100% error-free written material. Number 4, watch your language. Number 5, be emotionally mature. And number 6, do what you say you're going to do. Let's take these one by one. Number 1, be on time. Well, this is self-explanatory. Don't be late. Not for business appointments, social engagements, or your massage. Remember, every single person you come in contact with has the potential to be your biggest fan. Don't blow it by disrespecting their precious time or looking too unorganized or flustered to show up when promised. I realize that some human beings simply don't have the be-on-time gene and are always, 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 always late. It's simply a part of who they are, and, contrary to what most of us always-on-timers believe, I don't believe it's a sign that the always-late person is disrespectful or doesn't care about us and our busy schedule. However, notice what I just said. The perception that the always-late are disrespectful or uncaring is pretty prevalent in society, and you aren't going to change it. On a social level, your friends might put up with your always-lateness, but it will definitely put doubt in their minds that you're an RCHB, and it will most certainly hurt your chances with potential clients. Number 2, return phone calls promptly. Return all phone calls as soon as you can, not just business ones. You only have a short window to return a phone call promptly. If you wait 5 hours or overnight, you've blown it. Sure, you can apologize or offer excuses, but that won't even come close to the positive impression you'll make on someone if you return their call in 5 minutes. My first year in real estate, I carried a pager, and I returned calls as soon as I was paged that I had a message. I can't tell you how often I got a new client because I was the first person to return the phone call. Some worry that by returning phone calls too quickly, they'll come across as desperate, but I'd rather you take that chance rather than the reverse, that the person doesn't think you care about them or wonders if you're organized enough to take care of their needs. Recently, I called a mortgage broker on a Friday afternoon, and she didn't return my call until Monday afternoon. She apologized, saying her computer had crashed and she'd spent all weekend working on it, which is understandable, but it didn't erase the perception that she didn't care about my business, or again, that she was too unorganized to take care of me. I heard some advice recently on this topic. It's from the olden days, before cell phones and cordless phones, but it was that after you listen to a message on your voicemail, don't even put the phone back on the cradle. Just clear the line and make the return phone call, even if you don't have an answer yet, even if you don't really want to return the call. Number 3, strive for 100% error-free written material. Obviously, this includes any promotional material you create, like personal brochures, newsletters, your website, etc., but also to any personal communication between you and your sphere of influence. Your announcement or reconnection letter, and even your emails, should be pretty darn clean. I know that not everyone is a terrific speller or enamored with proper grammar, but please make the effort. I'd hate to see you run off even one referral because you can't find the spell check button or figure out how to capitalize the first word in a sentence. There's an agent on an online forum I moderate who continually apologizes for his sloppy posts with the implied message that he's just too busy to do it right, which comes across that it's not important to him to do it right and he doesn't care about his audience. He actually has a lot of intelligent commentary, but it's lost in the difficult-to-read manner in which he posts. Again, apologizing or rationalizing is a poor substitute for just doing it right. Number 4, watch your language. I hope the following doesn't offend you. If you want to demonstrate your professionalism to the people you know, you need to cut down on the four-letter words. It's a habit many of us have, but unfortunately, it's a habit that can cost you business. I have a friend who is an insurance agent, but her language is so rough, I wouldn't dream of referring anyone to her, and I'm sure she wonders why. Does she behave that way with her clients? I don't know, but I'm not willing to take the chance with my precious referral business. I'll admit, I have a tough time with this one, and it's a constant struggle for me. I love four-letter words, and I think it's fun to toss them around because I don't look like someone who talks like that. But when I make a concerted effort to watch my language, I'm stunned at how noticeable it is when others curse around me and how jarring it is to my psyche. If you're like me and you have trouble with this concept, take a 1 week break from using any bad words and see if you become more sensitized to others' use of them. Something kind of related to this is that you need to watch how you talk about your, shall we call them, your vices. Let me tell you a personal story about me. When I was married in my early 30s, my husband and I were wine snobs. We drank a bottle of wine every night, sometimes followed by a glass or two of port or Bailey's or some other yummy dessert drink. All our friends were the same way. We were a crowd of yuppie winos, frankly. All of our social activities involved alcohol, and we were tipsy by 7 o'clock at night, pretty much every evening. When my husband and I divorced, I stopped drinking for the most part. Not a concerted effort exactly, but just because my lifestyle changed. And once I was away from it, I was stunned at how much my friends talked about alcohol. It was jarring to me to realize how central alcohol was in our lives, and very disconcerting to realize that I used to talk the same way, even to my clients that I didn't socialize with. I came to discover, much to my surprise, that not everyone in the world comes home and opens a bottle of wine every night, and it was probably very off-putting for me to conversationally share that part of my life with people who didn't share that lifestyle. A more dramatic example is a girlfriend of mine who has smoked pot pretty much her whole life. To her, smoking pot is a natural thing to do, and she seems to assume that everyone else does it. She often makes comments in mixed company about being high or stoned without apology, as if her audience can relate. Of course, some can, but many, myself included, can't. If you have friends who have seen you drunk or high or in other compromising situations, you may have trouble convincing them that you're an RCHB, especially if you're still partaking in these activities with them. I'm not the moral police, far from it. But just know that these people may never be good sources of business for you. Number 5, be emotionally mature. This is another potentially touchy subject, and females, it's mostly directed at us. Some of our friends have seen us at our most pathetic, haven't they? And we've seen them at theirs. But as someone who is hoping to project a professional persona to her friends, you might have to tone that down, or at least be very particular who you, talk to. It may be difficult for your sob sister to see you as a competent professional. I've had a few girlfriends in my life whose personal lives were such a mess I truly couldn't imagine that they could perform professionally in a work environment. I'm sure they did, but as much as I loved them, I simply was not confident in their professional abilities. Unfortunately, being emotionally mature can't even apply at home. Do you come home and whine to your spouse about your business or your clients or the market or whatever? Or do you express your confidence and optimism? This is a call you'll have to make, but do realize that your spouse may question your confidence if you always seem to be distressed about your job. It can be difficult for our families, including a spouse, to make a referral to us, because if the referral goes bad, it will reflect negatively on the person doing the referral. So, like it or not, you'll need to worry about this RCHB business, even in the safety of your own home. And number 6, do what you say you're going to do. Strive to never let anyone down. Don't cancel at the last minute or simply not show up. Learn to love a to-do list if you don't already. If you tell someone you'll call, call. If you RSVP to a party, go. If you promise to put a check in the mail, do it, now. If you owe someone money, pay it promptly. If you borrow a book, return it in a reasonable amount of time. Again, apologies don't overcome bad behavior, no matter how compelling your excuse. Just do the right thing, instead of trying to come up with a convincing reason you didn't. Now notice that none of these items really have much to do with being a good real estate agent. That's because if a friend or acquaintance has never used you as a real estate agent, there's no way to prove to them that you're good until they do. And of course, it's not effective to simply tell someone how great you are. You have to show them, which you can't do until they hire you. But if you come across as a generally reliable, responsive, intelligent, competent person, most people will assume that you're a good real estate agent too. Okay, on to our next topic, being a master of your market. One of the overall goals of the second half of the Savvy Prospector program is to learn how to attract business from strangers. Well, the very best way to do that, in my experience, is to know your market. What on earth do I mean by that? How can knowing your market help you attract business from strangers? Well, as a real estate agent out there in the world with your antenna up, what do you have to offer the average Joe who strikes up a conversation with you? Does he care how well you know your systems? Does he care how gorgeous your home brochures are? Does he really want to hear about your 32-step marketing plan for selling listings? Probably not, at least not right off the bat, but he may very well be interested in how houses are selling in his neck of the woods or about that underpriced duplex you previewed that morning. If he has any interest at all in the current real estate market and you can confidently make intelligent conversation about him, you'll get him if he's gettable. The same thing applies when you're sitting on floor time or at an open house. If the best you can do is hand the visitor a list of other homes in the neighborhood, but you can't really make conversation about them, the possibility of watching that stranger walk back out your door just went up. But if you can easily chatter on about nearby listings or comparable neighborhoods, you just dramatically increased the chances that your visitor will ask for your business card. When you're on floor time or take a sign call, again, if you can speak intelligently about the market either surrounding that listing or that your office specializes in, you'll easily capture those leads. There's a blog in my book called Why She Lost the $700,000 Buyer, and it's about this very topic. If you haven't read it, it's about an agent friend of mine who was contacted online by a buyer looking for a house in the $700,000 price range. My friend didn't know that market, but she raced right out and started previewing upper-end homes so that she could speak intelligently to her new prospect the next time they talked. Well, turns out that the buyer selected another real estate agent to work with, leaving my friend discouraged and disappointed. The agent the buyer selected was a specialist in the upper-end market, but my friend was still very hurt and made the assumption that she was dumped because she didn't dress the part or drive a fancy enough car. I disagreed with my friend. I don't think that's why she lost the buyer. I think it was simply because she was not able to excite the buyer during their first conversation about that segment of the market. I imagine that the agent who snagged the buyer was able to say something like, "Ooh, I just saw a house this morning that might work beautifully for you. It has an amazing view of the lake and a gourmet kitchen to die for, and the master bath is simply spectacular. Are you free tomorrow to go look at it?" Compare that to, "Okay, I'd be happy to help you. Let me do a little research and I'll get back to you." Which is about all you can say when you aren't familiar with a specific market niche. So how do you go about mastering your market? Well, again, there's a whole chapter on the subject in Sell With Soul, but in general, the best way to learn your market is to be out in it. No amount of research sitting behind your desk comes close to the knowledge you'll gain by actually looking at property in neighborhoods. If you make previewing a priority in your life, you can learn a market pretty quickly, or at least segments of it. For example, if I'm going to a party, I'll try to preview in the neighborhood around the party ahead of time. If I don't manage to do that, at least I'll pull up all the houses for sale on the MLS and might even make time to drive by them on my way to the party. I don't always get the opportunity to use the knowledge I gathered, but it certainly never hurts to add a little bit to my market knowledge. Take every opportunity you get to look at houses and properties, even if doing so isn't leading you directly to a paycheck. If you live in a resort area, make sure you can speak intelligently about the highly desirable properties. For example, how much does a beachfront home or condo cost? Or how much will a buyer have to pay to be on the slopes or right on the lake? Being an expert in your product, which is property, is the best way I know of to inspire strangers to think of you as a good real estate agent. When you can speak intelligently about your local real estate market, you'll be amazed how often people will ask you for your business card. It is a beautiful thing. Thanks for joining me today. We'll talk soon.